it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Goodish Girls. I'm Madison, and today we have a very special guest. You may know her from some of her other contemporary works like Runaway Love and her Cherry Tree series. But today we'll be talking about her latest story, Heart's Landing. Today we have Melanie Harlow. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I love your book, and I always see your books every time I go to bookstores. And my friend is like, whenever I told her I was doing this interview for Heart's Landing, she's like, oh, I've been meaning to check out her other books. I'm like, you should do it.
Thank you.
For those who might not be familiar with Heart's Landing, can you tell us and our listeners more about the story and how it came to your mind?
Yeah, so Heart's Landing is book one in a series. It is a small town series, and it centers on a group of five friends that were actually, it's four friends, and then one of them has a sister that gets a book. And these friends were very close in high school, and there was a fifth friend, but they lost her right before their senior year. And they promised her that on her birthday, what would have been her 18th birthday, that they would live the night like it was their last. So they each have to do something that gets them out of their comfort zone. And so that was sort of the idea for the series. I wanted a series about female friends that find their way back to each other after a period of time has gone by. But I didn't want to give away like what had happened to cause the rift in their friendship. I wanted to sort of let that unravel over time and over the series. So in each book, you sort of get one of the friends' story. And stories. And then the book one is about Mila. She was just a joy to write. And I knew that there would be a fire involved. I knew there would be a best friend's older brother. I love a good time charmer hero. And so I knew what kind of hero I wanted in Everett. He is a farmer. He is the mayor of this town because his friends bet him that he couldn't win. And he was like, bet I can. And Mila was going through a lot of different things. There's a complicated mother-daughter relationship. So my brain kind of, all of these different pieces like swim around until something starts to form cohesively. So it's messy at first. And then once they're talking to me, then I start writing.
It's awesome. I do want to touch on something that you mentioned because I found this very interesting. So we mostly follow the story of our FMC Mila and our MMC Everett, but you started the story with Lydia and Lydia watching over her friends. Did you always know that you were going to start with Lydia's POV?
No, that's a really interesting question. So originally, the what became the prologue was written from Mila's point of view. And it was the night, what they refer to as that night, where they get together. It's Lydia's, what would have been Lydia's 18th birthday. And the way that it had to work is that each of the friend, so the group has to assign what they have to do. Because if each friend got to choose for herself, she's going to choose something easy. She's going to try to make an end run around what scares her. And the friend group knows what that person needs to do to really conquer their fears and like get outside their comfort zone. So I originally wrote this prologue in Mila's point of view that night, what happened to her. And it was way too long. And it was too and my editor was like, okay, we have to cut this down. And she was the one who said, what do you think about having this as kind of a voiceover almost of this, of the friend that they lost who is observing this? So she's there and she gets to sort of narrate it. And she's a little bit omniscient, like she kind of knows what they're thinking, but sort of doesn't. And I was like, no way, that's not going to work. Like, what is that? Like, I'm writing about a ghost now. And she was like, just trust me and try it. And so I was like, okay, fine, just to humor her. And I sat down and I wrote the first line of the prologue, and it was like magic. I knew that was the right, the right way to go. Yeah, sometimes writing does feel that way. Not that often, but that time my editor was totally right and it worked, and I knew. So in each book now, Lydia will narrate the prologue. And then this might be spoilery, I don't know, but she also narrates the epilogue.
It's so cute to have her little POV, because at first it's really sad, because whenever we're introduced, like, she's watching over the friend group and she notes, like, this is the circle that we always sit in. They obviously have my spot saved for me. And just watching her follow Mila, especially like on the bridge, and she watches her write Everett's name on the rock.
Yeah.
And she's like, go do it, girl. Go do it.
One of the things that I was worried about having the POV character be like not there anymore, like this is someone they lost, I didn't want the tone opening the book to feel sad. So the challenge was like, how do I keep the tone of this lighthearted romance and make it sort of still, you know, funny and sweet and touching without it being, you know, traumatic? So that was what I really wanted for that opening. And I figured out a way to do it. Lydia isn't a tragic, I mean, it's tragic that they lost her. It's tragic that she died young, but she isn't a tragic figure in that, you know, all you want to do is cry when you think about her, because she is still very much present in their lives and sort of orchestrating things from beyond. She was really joyful to write, actually.
Yeah, because I, like, even though we don't see her too often, like, I loved Lydia. She had such a bubbly personality, and I mean, her friends still continue that spirit throughout the story as well, just through honoring her memory. But I thought that was very, very beautiful.
Thank you.
One really funny thing that we wanted to discuss is me and Dallas, we both come from small towns, and we are so thankful that we're not in small towns anymore, because in your book, you introduced a online news forum that the town people use to gossip about everyone in town. So we just wanted to know, what was the inspiration for that?
So that was one of the most fun things about writing this book. The landing pad is like this community forum that it's supposed to be like a service for the community. Like, you can use it to like keep up on what's happening. And there are like, you know, notifications of events, and there's a question and answer forum. But mostly people just use it to like gossip about each other. And so, you know, there were ways that I thought that that was a fun way to give the flavor of the town, because otherwise you're sort of left with, okay, well, how can I get across what sort of town this is? And I could have done it in paragraphs with like longer descriptions, but I thought, no, this is a more fun way to hear the voices in this town and get to know some of the characters are there and what it's like to grow up in this place where everybody knows everybody else. Everybody is in everybody's business. And some of the characters, they are familiar in any small town romance. You know, there's like the meddling old ladies and the matchmaking grannies and all of that. So they are familiar characters, but just in a, it's just a fresh take on them. It was really fun to write.
I had a really fun time reading them, and I absolutely loved every single name that you came up for within not only like the towns, the landing pad. My favorite one was Nitty Bitty. But then also with like the guys group chat, you just had like the hot mayor, axe god, and all these things. I'm like, this is incredible.
I love a group text, but I was like, the town needed something more than a group text. So I thought the community forum. And it really, it also allowed me to do a lot of work to introduce other characters who will have books in the future, you know, in the series.
Well, I definitely enjoyed it, but also God bless Axe God, because that boy was getting, you're not following community guidelines. If you need a reminder, click here. I'm like, bless his heart.
That character is so much, he was very fun to write. And he, I'm sure if you read book one, anybody who has read book one will probably guess that he is the hero in book two. And that the moderator of is Yasmin, she was the one who kept saying, like, you either follow the rules or I'm going to kick you out, because those two are constantly butting heads. And they are the main characters in book two. And I had such a hoot writing their story.
I bet, because I loved just their whole dynamic of her trying to have poetry night and being like, no, like, she knows Friday night is the night to be out. Like, what?
Yeah. He gave her such a hard time. And there's like a long standing history of contention between them. There's lots of animosity. And then she put in a wine bar, like, slash bookstore right next to his brew pub. And he's like, wine and books are the two most boring things on the planet. Like, what are you doing? Who wants to read poetry on a Friday night? Yeah. So he turns up his music even louder.
Actually, a lot of people really enjoy reading books and drinking wine.
That's exactly what I'm going to go do after this.
Great way to spend the evening. So I also want to dive in a little bit more. And something that Dallas wanted me to touch on is one of the big tropes that you have is the fact that we have a found family. And throughout the whole entire book, we get to see a lot of Mila's relationship with her mother. And it was really, really rough and kind of hit close to home for both me and Dallas. And just seeing her relationship, as well as Everett discussing his relationship with his father. And we just want to know if this is like a time where, if you do not want to answer, you totally don't have to. But if you're comfortable talking about the inspiration behind those two characters having such a hard time with their familial figures, would you be comfortable diving into that?
Yeah, it's a really important part of the book. And I did worry that it would hit too close to home for some readers, because Mila's relationship with her mother is very complicated. And obviously, Everett's relationship with his father was also complicated. But Everett's father is already gone by the time the book opens. But Mila returns to her hometown to help take care of her mother after her mother has surgery. And her mother is just a narcissist. And so the theme of found family for me was very important for Mila, especially because she's an only child. She never knew her father. She tried so hard all her life to earn her mother's love and approval, and it was never given. And, you know, at this point in her life, and she's never been good with boundaries. So because she wants her mother's love, like, who doesn't? And even though she can recognize that the way her mother treats her is manipulative and unfair, she cannot bring herself to give up on it. So that was very hard to write, and I knew that it was going to be uncomfortable for some readers. And I said to my editor, do I pull back on this? I'm afraid. And she was like, no, I think you have to keep it. You have to keep it in there, because it made the romance sweeter, because in the end, you know, she has to learn that she does deserve love unconditionally. And Everett is there to give it to her. So I had to do a lot of research. My relationship with my mother is wonderful. My mother is the nicest, funniest, kindest woman. I wish everybody had a mom like her. So I went to the library And I took out books on difficult mother-daughter relationships and narcissism. I did research online, but I love a library book. So I that's always my first stop. And just sort of felt out, I looked for first-person narratives of what it is like to grow up constantly seeking that love and approval and not getting it because that person is incapable. And one of the nicest emails that I've gotten since Heart's Landing has published is from a woman, and I just met her actually in Dallas at a signing that I did this week, that she came and she said, I'm the one who emailed you. And she said, thank you for putting this on the page. I felt really seen. But what she was really grateful about was that I didn't fix that relationship in the end. I didn't magically cure the mom because she was never going to change. It had to be Mila coming to terms with the fact that she was never going to get back what she was putting into it. Mm-hmm. And so she had to just realize, okay, I'm not getting that. Now I'm going to have these boundaries and I'm not going to let my mother, you know, make me feel unworthy and undeserving of love anymore. And the mom, of course, is never going to understand that and never going to change. And I knew that it wasn't like love is going to suddenly cure her. So I was happy to have that email, and it was lovely to meet that reader.
But I am glad that you kept it realistic because, I mean, you can hope that people will change, but that's not always the case. And that's one thing I really love about contemporary is that, like, even though whenever people think contemporary, they're like, oh, like, it's love, everyone having a good time, and it's always going to be happily ever after. But also, there are always like really good nuggets of lessons inside as well. And I really appreciated reading Mila and her mother's story.
I'm glad. I mean, I think even though you have a happily ever after, you're always going to have to navigate difficult and complicated relationships. I don't think it's, and romance is a fantasy, sure. But for me, the kinds of fantasy that I enjoy writing still do have those elements of realism, and navigating a complicated relationship within your blood family is, it's real. It's something that we all have to deal with. And I know her mother is terrible. That's one of the first things people say to me is, her mother is so terrible. And I'm like, I know I had to make her that terrible. Because if not, because I really wanted that romance to be even sweeter. Because of what she had been through. So, yeah, but she was awful.
No, I really appreciated Everett, especially like whenever he kept on bringing her meals, he was like, she was saying like, you keep feeding me. He's like, you're not eating. So yeah, I'm going to do
yes.
it.
Yes. Oh, like, when he brought her the food and the coffee. I know.
Yes. No. I'm like, key to my heart.
For me, someone who brings me coffee the way I like it and a meal when they know I'm not going to eat. Like, yes, please just take me now.
One other thing that I wanted to talk on with Mila and her mom, because I mean, this is, if it's in a book, it's automatically, I'm be like, I'm reading that. I also used to dance for about 14 years. So I was like, I need to know if there's a story behind the reason, like making Mila's mom a professional dancer and putting Mila through dance classes.
I also own a dance studio.
Wow.
So, yes. So I grew up dancing and my daughters danced and I now own a dance studio. I don't work there day to day. I have a partner and she is really like the day to day manager. But yes, I've been involved in dance forever and ever and ever. And I know a lot of dance moms. And I just took every really terrible thing every mean ballet teacher has said. And imagine, like, what if that was your mom? So, yeah. So if you've studied dance, you know that there just are those perfectionist teachers that are have unrealistic demands. And this was a person that just had unrealistic demands on human beings in general. Although it was interesting to me, one thing I read about was that a lot of times narcissists are very charming and likable if you are not the child. So I have some interactions in the book where she's very warm and pleasant to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it was the contrast between the way she interacts with other people and the way she treats her daughter, which made her even worse, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's where the dance thing came from.
Okay, because I had to ask, because I'm like, there's a lot of good dance stuff in here. And I'm like, as a dancer, I approve.
Because there's like, were you a ballet dancer?
I did ballet, point, jazz, contemporary. I did essentially everything except for tap. Because by the time that was introduced to my studio, one of the girls who I grew up dancing with, she went to another studio, learned tap to bring to our studio. But that was also like the class that all of the kids wanted to learn. And I am very tall girl. And so I'm like, if I join that dance class, it's going to be a lineup of kid, 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 me, kid, kid, kid. So I'm like, would I love to learn tap? Yes, but no.
Well, one of the things that is popular with adults is tap. So you can go find an adult tap class, I bet.
I've been wanting to find a dance studio around here, but it's so hard to find one that's not like competition based,
right,
or it's not all like intro to where it's very simple floor work. I'm like, I want to be sweating. I want to be pushed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you lived near me, we've got like classes for former dancers, kind of like. So we have like adult ballet and we have tap. Yeah. Yeah.
I could have lived out my tap
dream.
Maybe one day I'll make a trip just for a tap class and be like, I'm here.
Do it. Buy yourself the shoes. Do it.
Yes, because I do get a little bit of cringe because I know like dance on social media has like kind of become a thing where I see people who are not dancers purchase point shoes. And like,
it hurts my eyeballs so much. There's that Instagram account, Models Doing Ballet. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah.
It hurts every fiber of my being.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it. Yeah.
And I'll see people like putting on point shoes for kicks and gigs. I'm like, I had to train for 2 years to train my ankles to be like that. You can't just go up for fun.
No.
Mm-mm. Essentially, one of the big conflicts in this book, hopefully everyone who's watching has read it. If not, it is going to be a spoiler. So choose your own adventure. But in the story, one of the big conflicts is that they're trying to build this community center, but it's on contaminated soil. However, Mila does have the idea to plant these sunflowers to help take all of the toxins out of the soil naturally. And so Dallas wanted to know specifically what went into that. Like, are there any in real life things to the plants taking contamination out of the soil, or is that like
that's
something
a real
that you
thing.
Thought of? Okay.
No, that's a real thing. I looked it up. I had to do the research on this. I knew I had a vision in my head that this town was like an old, that it was a town that like an old fashioned industry built, because mm-hmm. I really love those towns with like the 19th century buildings on their main street.
Mm-hmm.
And there are towns in Michigan because it's a manufacturing state. So we've got some towns that were built on like shipping and iron, and they're really beautiful old towns. But there's some problematic history. So I kind of played off that a little bit. And I knew that I wanted to have their meeting spot where they used to meet as kids be like this abandoned foundry.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of spiraled from there. And because of what Mila does, you know, she's a botanical illustrator. So she would have had to learn about, you know, flowers and botany. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, what would be a way that she would be able to contribute to the rehabilitation of this site where they used to go? So mm-hmm. there was a metaphor component to it, that she was taking something, you know, damaged and repairing it. And then there was the literal, like, she has skills that would be useful to Everett in this way.
Yeah, because I know, like, especially me and Dallas were both science girlies. So we're just like, ooh, I wonder how much research is actually done into this. But
I think it's phytoremediation. Yeah, it's a real thing.
Well, I appreciate you putting in the work and doing that research. One more thing that I wanted to touch on that is a very, very big spoiler. So again, if you have not read the book, you have been warned. But I want to know that when you were writing this story, did you always have Gabby in mind as the person who was the reason for the fire?
No. No, that developed later. I knew that it wasn't going to be Mila's fault. Mm-hmm. I knew there was decent reason to be like, well, you were the last one there and you were responsible for closing up. So you must not have, you know, you were neglectful. You mm-hmm. failed something. And of course you failed because you had a hot boy in there and you were messing around with him or whatever. And she was going to feel really guilty about that because of the fallout from the fire. But no, I didn't know. It made sense that maybe someone else was there since they were up front, but I didn't know who it was going to be. And then I had the character of Stevie to play with because he was like this kid that had a crush on Mila and he was there too. And I thought, oh my gosh, what if he saw something, but he didn't speak up because he didn't, he wasn't supposed to be there. So that was really fun for me to figure out how to kind of weave those threads and only kind of unspool a little bit at a time. That was new for me. I mean, I'm 30 books in terms of my contemporary romance career, but this was the first time where I had kind of an element of suspense in a way that unfolded as the novel progressed, but it was tied to both the romance and the friendship, you know, the friends reuniting. And so it was really, really fun for me as a writer to kind of figure out. I'm not a good plotter. I can't see it before I get there and I'm like noodling around. So I want to be a plotter so badly. I'm so envious of writers who are like, oh, I have this full, you know, 30-page outline. I've got every chapter summarized. I have tried so hard. It just doesn't work that way. I know some things going in. And obviously in a romance, you know how it ends. But otherwise, I just have to get them talking to me and let the story unfold. Not fair.
So one thing that you have mentioned a lot is that you said, like, once you get into the story, you might not know how plot's going to work out, but you just kind of listen to what your characters are telling you. Is there a character in your book that kind of tries to like overpower everyone else? Is like, I have something to say.
Yeah, I would say book two, the character of Ripley. I mean, in book one, he is the hero in book two, which I've already turned in. It's already written. He wanted a book so bad. Like, he would not shut up in my head. And I had to keep being like, you need to go wait in the hall until it's your turn. I can't have any more.
You don't have the talking stick.
Yeah. Like, you need to just wait your turn. And but he just really was demanding a story in my brain. Yeah.
That's so funny. That totally checks out. I could see that. And then I also know that you said that you did your research whenever it came to like looking into what plants did like help with the decontamination of the soil. Another thing that I wanted to know, just because I told myself like every time I open the book and they mention it, I'm like, oh, I need to look into that. Can flower, like if you sweep it up enough, whenever she said like, oh, I think that's started the fire, that's I was real. Like, is that a thing?
That is real. Flour is combustible. I had no idea. I had no idea. I came across it. I was looking for ways that an accidental fire could start at a bakery. Like how could, you know, there's the obvious like leaving an oven on. But yeah, one of these things was like a flour dust explosion. I was like, what? But yes, if you Google flour dust explosion, flour dust is extremely combustible, and you could have even like if you kick up enough dust and there's faulty wiring, you can start an explosion. Yes.
Interesting. I will be looking into that because every time they mention the flour, I'm like, I need to see if that's actually
true. It's real. I know. I was like, Who knows?
I don't use flour often whenever I'm baking, except to like put it on my hands to help dough not stick. But I'm like, I'll have to be careful in the future because yes. I don't want to be a Mila.
No, do not kick up the flour dust. Yes, it's a real thing.
So you also mentioned quite a few times that the next book will be featuring Yasmin and Ripley. Can you give us any other little sneak peeks or any little secrets to book two?
Sure. So it's an enemies to lovers story. They have beef going back, many years since he has been tormenting her since elementary school, and they grew up next door to each other. And then he was this popular, golden boy, quarterback in the football team, whatever. And she wanted to be class president really bad. Yeah. And he ran against her. And his, it just being like, I'll extend lunch to 2 hours. And the student body's like, yeah. So, of course, he beat her. And she just never forgave him for that. That she had to be, because she came in second, she had to be his vice president. So he has called her Veep for a decade.
Okay.
And then she moves in. She rents the building next door to his. Mm-hmm. And so they have these businesses. So they're like rivals. She owns a wine bar. He owns a brew pub. And in book two, there's this contest. They both want the rooftop.
Mm.
And they only one of them can have it. So they decide they're going to have this contest. And it uses like the community forum for voting. And they try to outdo each other. And they have I think the contest goes for, now I can't remember if it's 3 or 4 weeks. I think it might be 3 weeks. And at the end of each week, when the vote is tallied, whoever is ahead gets to punish the other one, like by giving them a consequence. So it's like prank wars. So mm-hmm. there's competition, there's prank wars, there's a lot of butting heads because they're just opposites. But underneath it all, of course, once they have some more, deeper conversations, he helps her out a lot. And she realizes that there's more to him than she thought. There's a very hot scene while they're listening to one of her audiobooks.
Wow. Living the dream.
Yeah. So it was just really joyful to write. And it was special to me too, because Yasmin is Lebanese and I married into a Lebanese family.
Aww.
And my mother-in-law just passed away in December at the age of 100.
Wow.
And so I gave Yasmin, she calls her Siti. It's like a Lebanese word for grandmother.
Uh-huh.
So I wrote my mother-in-law, or we call her Siti, into this book in many ways. And it really felt like she was so supportive. She was hilarious. She mm-hmm. loved to cook. So there's lots of scenes with food, and she's a little bit of a meddler too. So it was just a lot of fun to be able to celebrate her in that way. So this book is very special to me.
Oh, well, I can't wait to read it because that's awesome. And also just having Ripley and Yasmin, their moments in this story, they were such fun characters. I had such a blast.
I hope everybody just has a good time with that book. There's nothing too heavy about it. It's just a really hot, good time.
And then with this second book, because you said you have it squared away and everything, mm-hmm. are you able to give us any tour dates that you might already have planned that listeners can be on the lookout for to see if you're coming to their towns?
I don't have any travel dates set up for book two yet. It's going to release in March.
Okay.
That is all that I know. And I don't really have any. I was just in Dallas with Corinne Michaels for her release. But right now I don't have any tour dates or events planned for the rest of 2026. I sort of have to buckle down and write books because I'm also releasing an indie series in 2027.
Fun.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. It's firefighters.
Love that. I have yet to read a firefighter romance, so maybe it'll be my first.
Yes. Yes. So it is, it's kind of adjacent to another series of mine called Cloverleaf Arms. So if anybody was a fan of Ignite, which is part of the Cloverleaf Arms series, it is sort of related to that story. That was a firefighter. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, everyone be on the lookout for that. Kind of to give more people a little hint of book two. Is there a specific song that you have in mind that you think of and you're like, this reminds me of book two. This reminds me of Yasmin and Ripley.
Oh my gosh. Yes, there are several. So Ripley collects old vinyl albums.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a song playing from an Otis Redding album on his turntable when she knocks on his office door once. I have a playlist for this book. So Nice to Each Other by Olivia Dean is a song that reminds me of Ripley and Yasmin. And then I Only Have Eyes for You by The Flamingos plays a role in the story. And then I cannot think of the name of this stupid Otis Redding song. And I love this song. Because there were two and I couldn't decide which one I wanted to use.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's These Arms of Mine. But I could be wrong. And if that's the wrong one in the book, you guys, this is what happens when an author gets old and has brain fog and she can't remember which one she went with. But yeah.
It's always whenever you need it to where you're like, I don't know. Yeah. And then at 3 a.m. we're going to be like, it was this song.
Yes! 100%. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me and to share about Heart's Landing and a little sneak peek of book two.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me and asking great questions.
Thank you so much. If you listeners had a fun time listening to this episode, make sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment. We love reading those. And make sure to check out all of our episodes on anywhere that you can stream podcasts. Until next time, this has been the Goodish Girls.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If mornings feel harder than they should, your sleep might be the reason. The original Bamboo Sheets by Caraloha create 5-star comfort that helps you fall asleep faster and sleep deeper thanks to the natural, cooling, soft benefits of Caraloha bamboo fabrics. No tossing, no overheating, just the kind of sleep that helps you wake up clearer, calmer, and ready to go. It's resort-level relaxation that turns every night into a reset for your body and mind. Start tomorrow feeling better than today. Shop Caraloha Bamboo Sheets now at caraloha.com. That's CARILOHA.com. And wake up to better mornings every morning.